In the 1930s, a New York prosecutor brought down Lucky Luciano, the notorious head of the New York Mafia. It made the prosecutor Thomas Dewey a household name and set him up for a career in politics. Less remembered is the staff lawyer who made it possible, an African-American woman named Eunice Carter.
And her story is the subject of a new book that is called Invisible, the forgotten story of the black woman lawyer who took down America's most powerful mobster. It's by her grandson, the law professor and prolific writer Stephen Carter, who told Steve Inskeep that he knew his grandmother growing up, but was never told about her accomplishments.
She did all these things. She was a prosecutor for years. She was a big power in Republican politics for a long time. And yes, I grew up without knowing any of that, but knowing it now, I think the story is quite a remarkable one.
I want to underline that name, Thomas Dewey. People know it because of the famous false headline, Dewey defeats Truman. He was the presidential candidate who was supposed to win in 1948 and lost. But before that was a noted prosecutor in New York City. What was the task he was set to in the 1930s?
So in 1935, New York experienced what the press called the runaway grand jury, when a local grand jury refused to work anymore with the corrupt district attorney's office, which was making no effort to break up organized crime. So the governor of New York forced the New York district attorney to choose a special prosecutor who ended up being Thomas Dewey. And his job was to clean up organized crime in New York by hiring people who had never been prosecutors, who had never been involved with the prosecutor's office, which was seen as entirely corrupt. So he hired what he called the 20 against the underworld, 19 white men plus one black woman, Eunice Carter.
No matter how many pages of your book I read, it still seems somehow a little surprising to me in a time of such prejudice that first that your grandmother became a lawyer, that she became a successful lawyer, and then that she got hired by this white prosecutor. How'd that happen?
We don't know exactly why he hired her, but hire her he did. The downside was that after Dewey hired her, he set about again trying to investigate Lucky Luciano. But Dewey wanted to investigate him for murder or some what he considered a serious crime. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the only woman and only black person on his staff, my grandmother Eunice, Dewey assigned to look into prostitution, even though he made clear that he had no intention of prosecuting Luciano for prostitution because Dewey said he was not going to be a moral crusader.
Wow. And Eunice Carter faces the task, along with these other lawyers, of trying to find some way to work her way up to the top man, to Lucky Luciano. Where did she begin?
So after Eunice was hired, she was banished, in a sense, to the furthest cubicle in this special office Dewey had set up. And when Dewey asked citizens of New York to come in and talk about organized crime in their neighborhoods, it turned out that most of the letters and complaints were about prostitution. All these complaints were coming in. They had to be dumped on somebody's desk, and they were all dumped on Eunice's. There's a sense in which she was sidelined during the investigation, but she didn't let that hold her back. In fact, from that beginning, she went over to the attack. She actually put together the first evidence anyone had ever had that the mob was involved in prostitution, because it was an article of faith among the police that prostitution was run by small-time operators and certainly the mafia was not involved. Eunice set herself the task of proving otherwise, and against considerable opposition, including in her own office, she succeeded in proving it.
I guess the method here is you start at the bottom, work your way up?
Something like that. Once she began to gather the evidence, she persuaded Dewey to arrange police raids, which Eunice was in charge of, on 80 brothels one night. They brought in the prostitutes, the women who worked in these brothels, and there's a reason they arrested only the women, because the women were accustomed to being bailed out by these men called the fixers, but they had arrested the fixers too, so there was no one to bail them out. The idea was to keep the women in so they would turn against the fixers, then to pressure the fixers so they would turn against their bosses, who turn against their bosses, who hoped would ultimately turn against Luciano. And to everyone's surprise, Eunice's idea worked.
Wow. And how did the trial turn out?
The trial was actually a lot of fun for the press, precisely because the main witnesses against Luciano were prostitutes. And one of them, for example, the one the press had the most fun with, was a woman known as Cokie Flo Brown. The reason she was known as Cokie Flo was because of her cocaine habit. When she arrived on the witness stand to testify that she'd overheard Luciano several times discussing the prostitution business with his aides, she was so jittery, apparently having withdrawal, not having had a fix in several days, that the judge three times let her interrupt her testimony in order to have a sip of brandy to calm her nerves. And finally, the defense counsel, that is Luciano's lawyer, demanded that she be tested for drugs to see whether she was high during her testimony. So Cokie Flo was taken to another room with a couple of doctors and Eunice, because Eunice was the only woman on the prosecution team and Luciano's team had no women. So she was there when the doctors examined her and returned to pronounce that she was drug-free. And the jury obviously believed her testimony because the jury voted very quickly to convict.
So how does learning this story change your understanding of New York City in the 1930s or America in the 1930s?
One thing to take away from it is how similar, in a sense, America then was to America now. My grandmother was on the commission that was appointed by the mayor to look into the causes of the New York City riot of 1935, which began in Harlem. And the commission's report, if you read it today, it sounds like it could be written today. It talks about mistreatment of black men by police. It talks about suspicion of black people as they go into stores. It talks about employment discrimination, all the sorts of things that people talk about today. But at the same time, I think part of our forgotten history is that there were people who, against all the odds, in that era and even earlier, made really remarkable lives for themselves, that there were people who built a society within the segregated world in which they could live and move and have their being, as they say, and have wonderful lives, even at a time when so many avenues were closed to them.
Stephen L. Carter is the author of the new history, Invisible. Thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.